every show, we like to kick things off with our pals from Talk Radio News. A lot happening in Washington, most of the focus on Syria. Jeff Holtzman joins us again on the heels of the president's speech, we'll say, speaking to the nation anyway, and people now dissecting that and what's actually happening as far as Syria is concerned. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Well, it's good to be back. And, yeah, everybody's still focused on Syria. I mean, there were other things happening today, obviously, the 12th anniversary of 9/11. There's, the House Republicans are trying to figure out what they're going to do about their government funding bill. But on Syria, it's interesting. Obviously, people talking about the president's speech last night. The only real concrete thing that happened today was John Kerry traveled to Switzerland. That's something the president announced in his speech. And tomorrow he'll begin talks with his Russian counterpart. The idea is that Kerry will, you know, vet the Russian offer to get a UN Security Council resolution to force Syria to turn over its chemical weapons program. And, hopefully Kerry will be able to gauge the seriousness of the Russians as well as the seriousness of the Syrian government as well.
Yeah, it's interesting as he's headed to that, meeting and what's gonna happen there. You were just telling me before we jumped in the air that, Vladimir Putin, the president, of course, of Russia, has an op-ed piece in the New York Times and, realizing that so much is being talked about with Russia. What did you get out of, and I know you're perusing that, what did you get out of that piece?
Well, this is going to be a big story tomorrow morning, but the headline is a plea for caution from Russia, and the image on the story is a hand, like a held up as a stop sign. And essentially the point of the op-ed from Putin is to say that the U.S. should not strike Syria because it does not have international cooperation. Putin making a strong case that if the U.S. does not get approval at the U.N. and the Security Council, then it shouldn't, you know, skip bypass the U.N., that is, and attack Syria. And ironically, that's kind of how a lot of people here in the United States feel. Whether they think that, you know, it's because the U.S. shouldn't bypass the U.N. or that Congress needs to approve it. One way or the other, the majority of voters are not on board with attacking Syria militarily, and Putin really trying to hammer that point home and sort of gain supporters, and gain more supporters and really make the case that the United States has no grounds to attack Syria. Of course, we know why Putin's doing this. He has a large strategic interest in protecting Syria.
Yeah.
It's a big ally of his, and we know, or at least very likely, certain that Putin has been funding the Syrian government, not only funding, but also supplying arms and possibly even chemical weapons, the same chemical weapons that Syria allegedly used on August 21st.
Yeah. And so as that's going on, you know, one of the things was the whole thing about Congress and what was going to happen with Congress. The president asked for the delays in the vote, well, in the House. And so obviously that's happening, correct?
Well, yeah, the president asked the Senate to delay the vote. That vote was scheduled to happen today, and it didn't. And we don't know when it's going to happen. It could be next week. It could be never. The whole thing is on the back burner, on the shelf, while the U.S. explores the validity and the sincerity of Syria's offer. And then not only, you know, whether Syria is, you know, genuine about turning over its chemical weapons program, but logistically, if that's even possible. The conventional thinking is that Syria possesses about 1,000 tons of chemical weapons. That's roughly 2 million pounds. And you know, they're stashed all over the country. It's believed that Syria has about 5 or 6 sites where they keep their chemical weapons. So, I mean, step one would be obviously, you know, allowing the international teams to come in and inspect. But step two would be showing them exactly where they are. And step three would be, you know, the international teams assessing whether it's possible to move those chemical weapons out of the country and how long it would take to destroy them and that sort of thing. And then you'd have to get a taker, obviously, too. Now, with Libya and their chemical weapons program, the U.S. seized all those and they stored them actually in Tennessee where they're still being destroyed. In Iraq, for instance, though, in the 90s, the U.S. just bombed their chemical weapons, and that turned out to be kind of a dumb move because the wind spread a lot of those chemicals through the air, and a lot of people suffered disease or died because of that. So it's a really, you know, from a technical standpoint, it's a really complex undertaking.
Yeah. There's kind of a last thought here. This is the anniversary of 9/11, too, while we're talking about all this stuff with Syria. And headed into D.C. was supposed to be a giant biker rally. Was morning traffic tied up because of bikers?
Actually, it was a little bit. I heard from other commuters that parts of the Beltway were tied up. What happened with the biker rally was, and this is how it started. So there was a planned million Muslim march today.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening was about maybe 30 Muslims came and rallied near the Capitol and on the Mall. And so they obviously didn't get the numbers they were expecting. Well, a group of bikers decided that they would counter that planned million Muslim march by sending 2 million bikers to D.C. They didn't quite hit their goal either, but they had, I think, more supporters than the Muslim group that organized their rally had. But what the bikers decided to do was, instead of all coming into D.C., they realized that would logistically be impossible. It would tie up traffic. They circled around the Beltway, which goes around D.C., and then they all huddled at a biker shop. I think it was a Harley-Davidson bike store in Fort Washington, which is just outside of D.C. But a couple of them sort of peeled off and came into D.C. We saw them around the Capitol today. So you had at one point about 4 different protests or rallies taking place at the same time. You had the Muslims. You had the bikers, then you had a small group of Christians that traveled from all over the country to protest the Muslims, and then you had a group of, Tea Party folks who were protesting President Obama, calling for his impeachment, saying that he covered up the Benghazi attack.
Hmm. Wow. So, if you're going to protest, you take it to Washington, apparently, and today was the day to do that. Wow. All right, Jeff Holtzman, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Kate, thanks.
Busy hour here on America Tonight. We're going to take a look back at 9/11 and where we are 12 years later. Besides that, that's at the tail end of the show, dissecting more of what President Obama had to say in his address to the nation on Tuesday. We're going to do that with Project 21, Stacey Washington, who was in the Air Force, and get her point of view on, in general, what the situation is in Syria and what didn't happen in the conversation the Prez had with all of us, which he thought were actually a couple of good key points, and then some that absolutely missed the boat, according to Stacey Washington. So we'll chat with her, too. And then, besides Stacey, we get another point of view from a professor from George Mason, Professor Rapkin, who says that the point was totally missed on the speech. And why are chemical weapons the line in the sand for the president when 100,000 people have been killed with their heads cut off and shot through walls of their homes and that kind of thing, which is a point that I've brought up many times here on America Tonight, the fact that there were so many people that were killed by other means. So what was it about the chemical weapons? And yes, I know about the agreement and all that other sort of stuff that happened in 97. And he talks about that and gives a strong argument for a few other things to happen. So we've got Stacey Washington, Professor Rapkin, and then we're taking a look at 9/11 and some of the memorials that were held across the nation to honor the people who left us way too soon and still, in many cases, very, very shockingly not expecting kissing somebody goodbye and waving to your child as they get on a plane that they would never, ever come back again. So stay with us. Keep it here on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what Pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for the enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
It's hurricane and wildfire season again. Why do thousands of people sit in these reoccurring problem areas year after year, betting their lives that the disaster won't get them? Hundreds of you helped eFoods Direct ship 50,000 donated meals to the Oklahoma victims. The problem is we can't help everybody. If every one of us who can will take care of ourselves, we can all pitch in to take care of those who really can't. The new just-in-case pack from eFoods Direct is the big brother to the 7-day emergency pack designed for Oklahoma disaster donations. It contains a 2-month supply for one person, or a 1-month supply for two adults, or a 2-week supply for a family of four. The $320 price is $50 less than retail. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Order two or more, get 10% off, free shipping applies. Call 800-409-5633 on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
America Tonight, where we've been talking about, of course, the president's address to the nation last night, reaction to that, and ultimately what could happen, what's happening on the ground at the UN, and thoughts really and from every nook and cranny. Always like to talk to our friends at Project 21. Stacey Washington is a member of Project 21 and a veteran of the U.S. Air Force. Stacey, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Thank you for having me on.
So, of course, this has to do with the president was focusing, I think, the gist of what he was trying to sell us. It was almost like a sales pitch to me, in my point of view. He was talking about the sarin attacks and what happened and that kind of thing, but didn't get into, you know, did he lay out what was a decent argument for military action? We didn't have that in the past whenever we were hearing from the White House, but then he kind of did make that point. That's why I said it was like a sales pitch. And then threw in the whole thing about at the very end, talking about dealing with Russia and talking about the chance of diplomacy. So I guess let me get your take first on his speech overall, what you thought, and about the sarin attacks and what you think should happen.
Considering I've been pretty harsh, a pretty harsh critic of the president and his speeches and the lack of substance and the use of repetitive jargon to kind of appeal to the low information voters to give them kind of like a little soundbite or talking point that they can latch onto and repeat over and over again, really not understanding that you need a deeper content and context to be able to communicate with a broad-ranging spectrum of intelligence that comprises the United States populace. So I've always been very, very critical of him on that aspect. It's never been good enough for me. I have to say last night I sat there expecting the worst, and he was actually quite coherent and laid out exactly what appeared to be his true feelings on why we should move forward with military action. Mm. Of course, that being said, I wasn't swayed by the information that he shared. And the reason that I wasn't swayed is because he never spoke to a clear and present danger to a United States interest that would appeal to the logic of using a military strike. And I know they say over and over again how tiny it's going to be, how minuscule, how limited, but the nature of military strikes by the United States military is one of a severe impact, and the cost to the American people is quite severe when you just think about the cost of launching one missile, $1.5 million. So you can see where just a few missile strikes and we're in pretty deep and we don't even have boots on the ground. And it seems pretty probable, even though he's saying no, that there will be boots on the ground afterwards because we're talking about chemical weapons. So moving forward, I think it's imperative that we take things slowly and evaluate every possible diplomatic avenue to avoid the United States military becoming embroiled in yet another failed experiment in the Middle East. We don't belong there. We don't have any business continuing to be embroiled in civil wars and factions in other countries. And as loath as I am to agree with Putin on anything, he's right. This is a local, national issue that the United States has no real interest in, and we should remain out of it. We should not become involved.
Sure. Stacey, and how about the deal? I agree with you. That's what I've been saying all along on America Tonight, even for the past two years, that all of a sudden we're late to the game anyway because 100,000 people have been killed in this civil war that's been raging for over 2 years, and now we're jumping into this because of what happened with the gas. While abhorrent, this puts us square in the middle of their game. Plus, I think there has to be, if the plan works, like, you know, and so in other words, there's a big sign off on this whole thing, and Putin's proposal that Syria give up all of its chemical weapons to international authorities, we'll call that the U.S., Russia, and a band of others, that's going to take some time because that's not going to happen overnight, is it?
No, it isn't. And that's the nature of becoming involved in the affairs of countries that are in civil war. I mean, one of the funniest things, there are two things that are glaringly ironic about this situation. And you named one of them off, which is that it's not 1,400 people we're talking about here. It's not about children. There were 400 children killed in the sarin attack. But it's not really about children, is it? It's about a number of warring factions within this country that are basically engaged and embroiled in a multi-fractional civil war. I mean, just discussing it takes a lot of savvy, and you have to be accurate about what we're discussing here. We're talking about factions of Al-Qaeda and all kinds of other interests that are not favorable to the United States. So we don't even have a friend in the fight. That's number one. We can't say we're going to help the rebels. What part of the rebels? There are more than one faction of the rebels. We can't say we're running in there to help Assad. He's obviously not our friend. And then the allies of Syria, also people that we should respectfully remain disengaged from in a wartime scenario, China and Russia. So, I mean, there's that. And then there's the other obviously ironic issue of the president appealing to the sentiment of Americans wanting to save children from poison gas, when in the United States, we legally abort 4,000 children a day, 10 times the number of children who were killed in the one sarin gas attack, and we do that with the full faith and credit of the United States taxpayer dollars, which are advocated for and pushed for by our current president, who fully approves of Planned Parenthood and all of the abortion industry in the U.S. So while that's not a little bit, you know, I'm stretching from one point to another,
sure,
it's clearly related when he's appealing to our deeper sentiment as human beings who care about children. It's ironic for him to appeal to us in that way when he views children in the womb so carelessly.
I'll tell you, there's just so many pieces to this. It's just like a crazy moving puzzle. And the overall feeling across the nation for lots of different reasons, including the one that you just mentioned, the analogy that you mentioned, a lot of people are saying, well, wait, look at this. Here's, you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth if you think about it. The other thing is no doubt the public still, even after addressing the nation, not on board with this. People really are starting to get what they, even if they don't fully understand it, that they don't want to go into what you said initially, the situation in the Middle East. It really is, it's like quicksand. It really is not a winnable thing for us, is it?
Let's just look at our history, okay? So we have traditionally gone over into the Middle East and tried to prevent chemical weapons from being dispersed out to terrorists and things of that nature. This is the reason why we originally became embroiled. People say it's for oil. I can buy into that. I'm by no means saying that the United States government doesn't look out for our interests on all fronts, not just military fronts. But when you look at Iraq and then you look at what's going on in Syria, they're not even in the same realm of possibility. Yes, they're both Muslim countries, but that's about it. That's about the end of the similarities. Now, we did go into Iraq, and I was fully supportive of that, and look what it bought us. Look at the blood and the treasure spent there, and look at how long it took us being there, and look at the extraction, and look at what's going on as we are pulling out and basically trying to release this country back out onto its own, on its own two feet. Look at what's going on there. And we don't really understand a lot, and especially our Congress people, they don't even understand the difference between Sunnis and Shia.
Shia.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're talking high-level intelligence brief individuals, people who have super top secret clearances, and they can't even distinguish between Sunni and Shia in the Muslim factions and what that means, and whether the Saudis are on one side or the other. If you can't discuss that coherently, why in the world would we want to become involved in Syria, where it's not just those two groups that are warring against each other, but it's Al-Qaeda, it's Hamas, it's all these different organizations sending fighters over to fight mini wars within the greater civil war that's raging over there. And who are we going to help? I would go back to that question. Who are we trying to help by bombing? If you're saying that we're trying to help ourselves, that's certainly a stretch. But which of these factions are we on the same team as that we're going to, you know, spend that kind of money bombing? Bombing who? Bombing what? We've been discussing it for so long. Any chemical weapons that may have been in one location have now been shipped or moved or transferred, buried, dispersed. And the individuals are no longer in the same places where they originally were. So exactly what are we bombing? If we end up bombing Christian areas, we'll be blamed in the media for that. If we bomb and innocent civilians, women and children are killed, we'll be blamed for that. I don't see an upside to this. And I don't really think there's a clear understanding. And, you know, I will be the first to admit I am no Middle East expert, but I know enough about it to even be able to delineate that there are more than two factions involved, which means I want to know how our Congress people, our intelligence people, our president, how are they laying a path forward for bombing anything at this point?
Yeah, so well said. Enjoyed the conversation. Some great insights. Project 21, Stacey Washington, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dodging streetlights late nights and nights, chasing after you.
Summertime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's summer specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale, CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fem and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for summer at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
No doubt. CNN once again. Capone and Noriega, let's live.
Illegal life.
Take over.
As we continue to discuss what's happening in Syria, we have one Professor Rapkin in the wings hanging out, ready to talk with us in our virtual green room. And he's, of course, with George Mason University law professor there. And he's an expert in the law of armed conflict. And that's what we've been talking about. Professor, thanks for popping on ATN.
Sure.
So let's talk about, first of all, I want to get your impressions. You listened to the president, less than 20 minutes, laid out a couple of things, a little bit of a lot, I think, of sales pitch in there. On a scale of 1 to 10, as somebody who's an academic, how would you grade that speech? Do you think he hit his mark in persuading people?
Just tell me, one the worst and 10 the best?
Yeah, 1 is the worst and 10 is the best.
Can I go below 1?
You can go below. Yes, you can.
I thought it was really, really unconvincing. And quite a lot of it I thought was just completely escapist, you know, fantastical. The last part of the speech, he talked about, well, now we're going to have this agreement with the Russians, which he said has the potential to remove Assad's arsenal of chemical weapons. This is just absurd. The one thing you can say for sure, it does not have the potential to do that. If I could, I'd just give you a couple of points on this.
Sure.
Where are his chemical weapons? We're going to be completely reliant on him to tell us. When he tells us, do we trust him that he will give us complete information? Let's say we do. That'd be kind of crazy, but let's say we do. Then what are we going to do with them? You can't just, like, you know, flush them down the sewer, just, like, burn them up. It takes a really long time to deal with them. The United States spent more than 10 years in a country at peace with very good infrastructure dismantling our chemical weapons. This is not going to happen in, you know, a month or even a year in a country that's at war. And the last and worst problem, I think, is even for those sites which Assad does say, yes, these are the sites here, here, and here, we're going to have to guard them. Who's going to guard them? And I think the answer is implied, is that, well, you know, international peacekeepers. And I don't see how you could rely on international peacekeepers to stop, like, terrorists from from attacking them. So I think we're really back to saying maybe Assad could guard them for us. But, hey, you know, there is weapons. So how do we remove them if he's guarding them for us? So really, I think this is completely fanciful.
How about the idea of initially, okay, I'm going to get Congress involved and get their approval, but then, oh, by the way, I don't really need their approval. But because if we look at our Constitution and almost implying, well, I'm a student of the Constitution, that's why I went to my friends in Congress to get some bipartisan agreement in all of this. Was that a big blunder?
And why now?
Yeah, why now?
How come you didn't remember this in Libya?
Yeah.
How come he doesn't remember this when he launches cruise missile attacks all around? I mean, I personally think that he should have gone to Congress, you know, months ago and said, well, we're not immediately threatened, but this would be a good thing to do, and I'd like you to come on board. And he could have prepared the ground and explained and maybe negotiated with Congress, and maybe he would have got somewhere. But you can't do what he did, which is to say, I'm all ready to go, and it's really urgent and something we absolutely must do. Oh, wait, by the way, is it okay? So first they got cold feet. I mean, it just that was really bungled.
Yeah. I agree. We're speaking with Professor Rabkin from George Mason University. He's a law professor and, you know, being schooled, obviously, in the law. And I mentioned you were an expert in the law of armed conflict. Is he on shaky legs here legally?
Well, I think it is a pretty strong argument. It is actually not totally clear, but I mean, there's a pretty strong argument that you're not supposed to use these weapons. Just to explain this, I mean, there is an international convention from 1925, which Syria is a party to, but that is about use in international conflicts, which this isn't. The Chemical Weapons Convention from 1997 does prohibit stockpiling even, let alone using. But he's not a signatory to that. So what the administration is saying is, well, he didn't directly commit to this, but everyone else committed to it, so he has to come on board, and that is actually a bit shaky. But even if you say, which, you know, it's plausible, well, almost everyone has condemned it, so that's, like, good enough. That's really an international norm. It just doesn't follow at all that because something is an international norm, anyone can just enforce it. I think we'd be very unhappy if China started enforcing international norms around the world. Right? The normal thing is when you're attacked, you defend yourself. Or you make commitments to allies, and if they're attacked, you help them defend themselves. Mm-hmm. But to just reach around the world and say, that's very naughty and you're really bad and we're going to punish you, it's really strange. I can't think of an example of that where any country has done that in the last century.
I can't either. You think of historical precedents, too, and you think of presidents in the past, and I can't place this anywhere, as you were talking about
right.
it being bungled.
I cannot think of an American example. And I do think that has something to do with people didn't think international law allowed that. I mean, the UN Charter says you can only use force in self-defense. So, like, intervening in a civil war halfway around the world, why is that self-defense? But here's, I think, the more important thing, which is it's very hard to sell to the American people who say, like, really? Why should we be doing that? And so he's got to crank up the, oh, no, it's really urgent, it's really important. And it just wasn't convincing to people, and it became all the more unconvincing and kind of confusing when he said, but we're not taking sides in the Civil War. So if you're not taking sides in the Civil War, what are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to have an intervention which is so limited that it doesn't tip the balance in the war, so then why would that even induce him to change his policies?
What do you think, Professor, what do you think how this will unfold? We've talked a little bit about Putin and his interest in this whole idea of this deal in the UN and whatnot. What do you think is going to happen?
On the surface, this thing was preposterous.
Yeah.
And that Obama has even said, oh, yeah, let's talk about it, to me says he's desperate to have some, you know, fig leaf, some covering to say, oh, yeah, well, okay, yeah, we got this. So then he can just climb down and walk away. And it's possible there won't be further uses of chemical weapons, but I don't know really why you would rely on that or assume that. So I think he's pushed this off for a while, but, you know, it may be back.
I agree. And do you think in laying this out, how we've just discussed this, Do you think that he won over anybody in the public? It doesn't seem that way looking at the polls and just even the people that we talked to.
You know, I'll say one other thing. So the first part of his speech was, these weapons are terrible. They're really, really terrible. They're terrible. And I don't think that should be convincing to people, because it's basically saying 100,000 people have been killed by other means. We don't care about that.
Right.
But, you know, 1,000 of them have been killed by chemistry. That is unacceptable. So it's positing this really sharp distinction between, you know, having bombs fall on your head and having poison gas. I don't know. I think if we could shrug off the 100,000 people killed by other means, I don't quite see why we're so worked up about chemical weapons. And I just think it didn't, you know, people just find that strange. It's like you have this fetish about chemical weapons, or it's like this is not actually about, you know, real strategy of our friends winning or our enemies winning. It's like an OSHA inspector says, oh, no, wait, you used the wrong ladder. You're not allowed to use that. Right? There's just something so weirdly disengaged from what's going on there.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think a lot of this was just save face because the red line thing. Here's the red line, and once you go here, this is
why
we're going to strike.
Why was that the red line? Why did he say
yeah.
that?
Yeah, why did he say it? And then I think it's that
and
saving face.
And he didn't explain it, you know? I mean, yeah. he just said it like, oh, that would be a red line. And everyone's like, oh, okay, so he has a red line somewhere out there. But he didn't do anything to help people understand why that was really important. And then he calls this, I have to address the American people. And, boy, he didn't, you know, improve the explanation. It was kind of emotional. We've seen pictures of children, and they're very upsetting. Well, I agree. Of course they're very upsetting. But we don't use force around the world because we're upset. I mean, that's not a strategy.
Yeah, we have to have a reason why we would, and especially intervening in
nobody. Why is this our
nobody.
Responsibility? That's
yeah.
a really fair
yeah.
question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just to take one other point, I mean, several million people have been killed in Africa over the past 20 years.
Yeah, Rwanda.
Terrible conflicts
mm-hmm.
there. We didn't intervene. We didn't do anything. A lot of those people were hacked to death by machetes. I mean, that
yeah.
was more gruesome than chemical weapons. And we didn't say, oh, no, we have to intervene because machetes are not a good way to kill people. I mean, the world is full of horrors, and it can't be that, well, yeah, we just, like, stop them whenever we feel upset because we didn't like the pictures. It just seems like you're not being serious as commander-in-chief.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect way to end this. I agree with you. I was just thinking in my head, Rwanda and all the things that have happened in the past.
Yeah.
Great, great
yeah.
examples. What? So
yeah.
personally, I don't like to see somebody hung upside down or have their head cut off or
right.
other atrocities. And then you
right.
know the other president doesn't like
that. And the serious thing, as we learned in Iraq, which it is serious. It's not polemical. I mean, I think on balance, we probably did a good thing in Iraq, but as everyone saw, it's not enough to overthrow the bad guy. You then have to put the pieces together, and that can be really, really hard. And you may unleash all kinds of nasty fighting. You may make the fighting worse. I don't know if we could really make it worse in Syria, but we do have to think about, well, wait, I mean, what's going to happen after our intervention? And I think Obama's afraid to deal with that, so he just said, oh, well, don't worry, it's not going to be a real intervention. As Kerry
yeah.
said, it will be unbelievably small. I'm sorry, if it's unbelievably small, it's frivolous.
I agree.
It shouldn't go around the world making frivolous gestures.
Exactly. Professor Rapkin, thanks so much for coming on America Tonight. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
Good. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to rock. Bet your soul. I'm going to rock. Till the law says stop. About the world around that I've got to lose. Tell all them chicks to get off of their roots. I fall on by this knocked out hall. Gonna live it up and I have a ball. Yes, I'm gonna rock.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
In times of disaster, internet and mobile networks will go dark. A wealth of online information will be completely inaccessible. Now, imagine the most extensive survival and disaster preparedness library ever created, with information for every possible scenario still available to you without online access. That's the survival key. Ben Franklin said it best. By failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. Get your survival key at GetSurvivalKey.com. Quite literally, the key to your survival. GetSurvivalKey.com.
You know about RVs. You've heard about bunkers. But surviving is not recreation. And man wasn't made to live underground. Introducing Survivalist Camps. The ultimate fully functional off-the-grid survival bug-out house that's mobile, well-equipped, and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Go to survivalistcamps.com to learn more. That's survivalistcamps.com. Providing your basic needs to survive. Survivalistcamps.com.
As a citizen, just a citizen of the United States of America, to help guide the partnership that put this national park and national memorial on the map as a real place.
All right, so all over today, people in their own way honoring the memory of those who were killed on 9/11. It's hard to believe that it's been 12 years. Last year, Benghazi exploded, and the tug of war over what happened there, and was it the ultimately a member of the Prophet Muhammad video that ignited what happened in Benghazi, or was it because of a 9/11 and a way to get back at us and whatnot. This time around, thank goodness, breathing a sigh of relief, we didn't have any questions about some kind of a terroristic attack on an embassy or something of the sort, on land, air, whatever. But it still is fresh, I think, even though it's been 12 years, it's fresh in a lot of our minds as to how much this changed our lives. And for some people, it changed them rather a lot deeper than others. And by that, I mean they were connected to somebody who died that day, whether it was at the World Trade Centers, whether it was in the Shanksville Field or the Pentagon, however it happened. It was horrific, and we have those daily reminders, I think, as we reflect in the tributes, where how we were just shook to our core, taking the lives of nearly 3,000 victims on September 11th, 2001. That fact not lost on Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense. Here's what he had to say.
I could see people jumping out of the building one, two at a time. Just absolutely horrific. I was snapped back to reality by the sound of a loud crash. A piece of the building had fallen and just flattened a car 100 feet from where I stood.
Oh, that was Brendan Lund. I'm sorry about that. He was one of the people that was there that saw what happened on 9/11 in New York. And then this is Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense, and his reaction now these many years later to 9/11.
12 years ago at this hour, in this place, a horrific act of terror claimed 184 innocent lives. Today, we come together to honor the fallen, surrounded by those who love them.
And the president also talked to the nation a bit about 12 years ago.
So this is the path that we've traveled together. These are the wounds that continue to heal. And this is the faith in God and each other that carries us through, that restores us. In your resilience, you've taught us all, there's no trouble we cannot endure and there's no calamity we cannot overcome.
The president and the first lady marked that moment on the lawn of the White House, 8:46 a.m. Eastern. There were a lot of crowds that gathered also at the site of the Twin Towers, of course, in New York, and they observed a moment of silence marking when the first plane crashed into downtown New York. And there were other moments like that, other bells that were rung at different times during the morning. And certainly the events that transpired on September 11th, 2001 transformed, really the entire country. And in some way, we were affected or touched, if you want to use that word, by the things that happened on that awful, awful day. And the pause to remember, I think, is so important. It's, you know, you can't live in the past, but there is something about reading the names and looking at the names on a memorial and just remembering them, especially for family members and people connected to them and whatnot. You know, you think of the first responders rushing toward the World Trade Center 12 years ago, and the unimaginable tragedy that unfolded that nobody expected, nobody was prepared for, certainly, and just how awful it was, but how much worse also it could have been because of the amounts of people that were in some of those areas. In Shanksville, Pennsylvania, they broke ground on the Flight 93 National Memorial, which is terrific, and they started construction on a visitor center that's going to tell the story of Flight 93. That's where four hijackers, as you know, turned the plane toward D.C. Most likely they thought they were targeting the U.S. Capitol building, and then it was the passengers and crew that ended up storming the cockpit and tried to gain control of that plane, and then the plane crashed into the field, and of course everybody on board was killed. And what's interesting too is that it shows you how people were touched. They raised $40 million, organizers, to get this going. That's a lot of money, and they raised that amount of money, and they got the green light on the memorial for the 40 passengers and the crew members that were killed. And what it's going to have is a plaza, a wall of names, memorial groves, and a field of honor. And the names of the people who were killed were read at a ceremony at 10 6:03 a.m. when that flight crashed. And then there's the town of Westfield, New Jersey. They hold their annual We Will Never Forget ceremony on Wednesday evening. That's when they held it to commemorate the 12 people who died on 9/11. And towns across Connecticut had ceremonies throughout the day. The governor of that state, Governor Daniel Malloy, declared Wednesday Honor Our Heroes and Remembrance Day. There were so many people, I've told this story before, that were commuting into the city that worked in the Twin Towers. And afterwards, you know, they had to find abandoned cars that were parked at train stations, and they would just mark them because they realized that must be somebody who got caught in this thing. So at each place, including the Pentagon, there was some kind of a ceremony to mark what happened. And they do that every single year, and I think that that's fitting to ring bell and to remember the exact moment and to read the names to never forget what happened and never forget the people who, as I said, got caught in something that they should have never, ever had to experience, and something we never, ever thought, honestly, would happen in the United States. Pearl Harbor was one thing, and then this was completely different on a sunny, sunny, beautiful, crisp day where people were bouncing off to work and certainly not expecting anything like that to happen. And the thing that's starting to I think, really take shape is what I just read to you in Shanksville, for example, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where they raised the money. People wanted to help and make sure that it got built because there was some controversy over trying to get that money. And the same thing in Manhattan. There was a tug of war over what the cost and what the design was going to be and how should it be the fitting tribute with the memorial and what was too much and what wasn't enough and all that kind of stuff. And in the end, because it was so emotional, finally things are starting to be settled in all of these different areas. And those memorials are coming up. We already have seen that certainly in New York, and we've seen a memorial at the Pentagon and now at Shanksville, Pennsylvania. So always keep that special moment in your mind and remember that we don't want to lose hope, certainly, in this country, but we don't want to forget the terrible tragedy that ensued while we thought that we were okay in the United States and that we were exempt from acts of terror. We can no longer say that.
One in every 50 homes will have a break-in this year. Burglars call it smash and grab. Police call it robbery. We call it avoidable. We are Fake TV, a simple electronic device that can fool even professional burglars. Fake TV easily plugs into any outlet and simulates the changing colors of a television. To a burglar, it looks like someone must be home watching TV, so they'll likely move on to an easier target. At only $29.95, Fake TV costs less than a month of most alarm monitoring plans and comes with free shipping. Order your Fake TV by calling 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. That's 877-532-5388 or faketv.com. Fake TV, the burglar deterrent.